This episode is brought to you in part by Richmond Graduate University. The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly. Richmond Graduate University can equip you to become a licensed professional counselor, integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmond.edu.
It certainly reshaped even how my ambitiousness expresses itself. And there's some ways that, you know, I've had to a few times be like, I don't know how to be me with these limitations because I'm like such a big dreamer and I'm ambitious. I cannot count on having whatever energy I have for that amount of time. And I feel like right now the Lord is teaching me to be more and more content with what I can do in this moment. And then seeing what's next and being okay with that.
This is Where You From, a podcast for those who believe it's important to stop and listen before we speak. Join us as we ask another Christian thought leader, where you from, and discover how their life experiences and expertise, even if we may disagree with something they say, offer us an important perspective that's worth thinking about.
Welcome to Where You're From. I'm Russell Berry. Have you ever felt like the expectations of people around you were too much? Maybe you felt like you were failing people by doing just what you wanted to do. Or maybe people continued to offer advice when they didn't understand the path you were taking. For Reach Records artist Tripp Lee, internalizing the expectations of his family was a part of his childhood. But as early as high school, Tripp was breaking the mold to pursue rapping. Tripp Lee is a husband, father, rapper, author, and preacher who navigates his many roles with grace and trust in the Lord. Join me as I ask Tripp Lee, where are you from?
Well, I'm here with somebody who I've gotten a chance to know over a decade now, closing on 15 years. And so I'm glad to have him here. And Tripp Lee, where are you from?
So I grew up in a suburb south of Dallas, so in DeSoto, and that's where I currently live. I made some stops on the way.
Okay. So Tripp.
Yeah.
That's an interesting name.
Yeah.
Get a sense that's not what your mama named you.
That's right. yeah, I'm named after my grandfather and my father. So I'm William Lee Barefield III. So Tripp comes from me being a third. My middle name is Lee.
That's powerful because that speaks to lineage and
that's
connection.
Right. Yeah.
So paint us a picture of what that was like growing up. So
yeah, both parents in the home. Yep. Both my parents, super hard working. My dad grew up in the hood in Houston. His dad, my grandfather, was one of the first black men to work in the particular factories that he worked in, mm-hmm. in Houston. Worked really hard to be able to be in those positions. One of the first black dudes that let operate that stuff. Yeah. And this is stuff that, like, when I'm a kid, I don't know this stuff, right? His dad, five sisters, his mom dies when he's about 15. So my mm-hmm. grandfather then is, you know, working all the time, providing for six kids. My dad is able to help raise his sisters and mm-hmm. And so my dad works really hard, first person in his family to go to college, and he's civil rights protesting kind of at the same time, but he kind of works his way through and super hard worker, which was a big part of the worldview he passed on to mm-hmm. me. So, yeah, and my mom, very similarly, her dad was in the military. He was one of the first really high-ranking black men in the military.
Wow.
So they grew up in a military family, all the while traveling all around the country, lived in a ton of different places, mm-hmm. which was interesting during that time because you may never stay at the hotel because they're a black family, mm-hmm. even though he's this high-ranking military official. And they go in some places. My mom, you know, went to some school like the year after it was integrated, which is like, my mom's not that old. Mm. You know, it's reminders this stuff isn't as far off as they seem. But my mom also, you know, goes to HBCU and she ends up being a dentist. My mom's a pediatric dentist, had a business. Again, stuff I didn't appreciate as a kid. Like, she's had this good, successful business serving the community for 30 years. And so, yeah, very hardworking parents, which they really tried to instill in us. We didn't always enjoy that. Me and my sister, I have a sister that's 2.5 years older than me.
Okay. Now, you said that with a gleam in your eye, and I hear that you do have some funny stories about you and your dad, and you even talk about that a little bit in your book.
Yeah.
Paint us a picture of some of what that looked like.
Yeah, my dad, because of how his world was shaped, the kind of hard work he had to do to make it to where he was. I mean, he really wanted to instill in me from the beginning of my life, like, for real, I don't care what you do, but you need to strive to be the best at it, right? And I think even a kind of perfectionism that is hard to even shake for me even now, you know, there's a right way to do things that led to right results, you know what I'm saying? That is very much ingrained in me and how I see the world. Yeah. Grew up in a world where, even more so than today, black people, black men are viewed in a particular way. And so a very hard emphasis on how you present yourself to the world and what that has to do with how you live your life. Even to sometimes I'm like, you know, I'm a kid, I want to be cool. I'm like, Dad, I want to wear this baby blue do-rag to school. It goes with my polo. You know what I'm saying? He's like, not doing that. You know, or, you know, came home and had my polo off and just had my tank top. He's like, nope, we don't do that. Like, we got to think about how we present ourselves in the world. We got to work twice as hard to get half the credit. So we got to think about how we present ourselves.
Right, and it sounds like for them, it was a matter of survival.
That's right. So whereas for me right now, I might be like, look, I'm not finna, like, try to be somebody else. Now, that's obviously within reason. You understand, if something happens to my flight and I walk up to the counter, I'm taking my hat off and I'm just like, ma'am, I happen to have an issue. You know what I'm saying? But for my parents, they didn't have the luxury of wondering how much they need to think about how to present themselves that we do. Yeah. In part because their generation fought that we wouldn't have to. You know what I'm saying? So there can often be ways that we can be young, naive, overzealous, and criticize other generations, not realizing we have the luxury of living in a different world because of the way they move.
That's a good word. And one of the things that always messes me up when I see, like, old movies, civil rights era, is that story of the Army veteran coming home from literally putting his life on the line.
That's right.
In war in Germany or something, and then coming back to the States and having to sit on the back of a bus and having to be called boy. And like, it's such a contrast, right? Because it's like, yo, I was just fighting to liberate other people.
That's right.
And now I'm being treated. And that always messes with me when I see it on the screen, but you heard it in your house.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Again, it is one of those things that you don't fully grasp and realize until you are older and you're really being like, hey, I remember when we talked about this. You know, my grandfather died when I was pretty young. One of my strongest memories was at his funeral because I'm a little kid and I'm like, oh, they're doing this particular flag thing. And, oh, they're firing off guns, which is very scary. I'm a kid. I'm like, what's going on? And I don't understand the significance of it as a kid. But, of course, being older, here's what his rank in the military was. Here's the barriers he had to break down. And, you know, for somebody my age, for my parents to have been successful at things, people in my generation whose parents were successful, there's going to be some, I was the first person to do this. I was the first person. My mom was the only black woman in her dental program.
Wow.
Held it down. You know, it's going to be a lot of those things that you don't fully appreciate as a kid.
So I'm starting to see a picture painted already of a certain interesting tension that you're describing. Right. Because you come from this legacy. They have discipline, military, hard work, barrier breakers. But you're growing up and you want to emulate the culture you see around you, which is in a lot of ways kind of counterculture to that stuff. And I'd imagine you get to school and the things that they weren't allowing you to do, you were seeing something different.
Yeah, I mean, so I went to a private school for most of my schooling. Second grade till I graduated high school, I was at this particular college prep school. I was cool when I was a little kid. Hated once I got a little bit older because it just wasn't a cool place to be. Wasn't a lot of black kids. I'm like, I don't really want to be here. But I had my little crew, ended up staying, and it was cool. But from being a very young kid, it wasn't like the stuff they were saying, even though a lot of it didn't sink in, it wasn't like it wasn't ringing true in my experiences at the same time. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I'm in third grade, you know, like, there's like three black boys in my grade at that time, maybe four. And this teacher was like, hey, Andre, Jeffrey, whoever you are, right? Named all the other black kids in the class except me and then went with the whoever you are. Wow. So for me as a third grader, I'm like, oh, yeah, my dad is telling me when he sits me down at the table and lectures me about things, this is what life is actually like. Mm. So while there are some things, it's like my dad's been like overly disciplined, like no one really thinking about that. I'm not going to be a thug. But at the same time, you know, I remember times my dad's coming home, like I was just at the store and this kid's pants hanging all down and it bothers him. And I'm like, why is that? Just let him go about his life. But my dad is just thinking, We worked so hard to get an amount of respect from our culture that we want your generation to appreciate and to see the privileges afforded by it. So there was a lot of that back and forth. Right. My first car was like, oh, I'm trying to get a Cadillac. My dad's like, no, you about to get this Nissan. Like, you're going to get pulled over. Why would you be driving that? You know, that's going to, the stuff that you think is cool about it that looks a different way to other people.
Yeah. So I'm seeing that pull, right? So, like, by the time you get to, like, middle school, which side is tugging your ear more?
So I think the stuff I'm gravitating towards, the stuff I think is cool, me and my friends think are cool. I've always loved music. I got that from my dad, who's just always playing music in the crib all the time. He wasn't a musician, but, you know, just always Stevie Wonder, Sly and the Family Stone, Earth, Wind & Fire, put me on a good
music,
stuff.
Music.
That's right. He's like, no, come here, sit down. And playing records and tapes and stuff. And he also prided himself on being like, I know what y'all listening to, too. So, I fall in love with hip-hop around that time. And I'm gravitating towards hip-hop culture. And so I'm like, if we go to Dilla's, Dad, I want this FUBU thing. And my dad is just always feeling the, like, I see those music videos and I don't want you to be that. I see that you've cut out pictures of Tupac and Big and put them on your wall and the rappers and all these dudes. And when I see that, that's not who I want you to be. I don't want you to gravitate towards things associated with stuff that my generation is trying to get us away from. You know?
So you're experiencing that intergenerational battle, like, right there with your dad.
That's right. And, you know, with hip hop, again, didn't understand at the time, but there was so much where he was like, you can like stuff, but just very hesitant because as much as we can be excited about hip hop, you know, there's so much content wise that is foolishness. You know, I haven't watched videos in a while. And me and my wife is just like, let's just see what's going on. And sometimes I can like step out and objective and be like, what do dudes be talking about? Like, I cannot believe. And then, I mean, what chance do kids have? It's like, this shapes our value system. Something I didn't really understand at the time, but like, even if I'm not going to listen to something and then try to go be a gangster, I am learning things about what I value. Like, I am learning things about how I think about women, how I think about what's cool, how I think about what status looks like. And so as I'm being drawn to that, my dad is kind of pushing back against that.
So let me advocate for Young Trip at the time for a minute, right? What was it about it that was attractive to you as someone who knew what good music sounded like?
That's a good question. I don't even know if I can pin it down. You know, when you're a kid and everything you like, you think, maybe I could do that. Space is cool. Maybe I could be an astronaut. But also, same thing with music. It's like, I'm going to be a musician and, you know, trying to play with stuff. There was something about rapping that I was like, I don't know. It drew me in a little bit more.
Okay, let's go more specific. Who in particular? When did you fall in love with hip hop?
Yeah, the first rapper I can remember hearing and loving was LL Cool J. I don't even remember what it was. Also, when you're a kid, there's a limit to your taste levels.
Right.
It's like when people put you on the good stuff, you like that. Sometimes put you on stuff that's not that good. And you just like what you hear. You don't know anything. I'm seeing this with my kids, and I'm trying to steer them and give them good musical taste. But I think first hip-hop album I had was probably Coolio Gangsta's Paradise. And I'm getting that, and I'm in like third grade, I think.
So when does the spiritual journey kind of start in the midst of this kind of cultural tug of war that's happening?
Yeah, when I am about 14 years old. So when I was a real little kid, my family would go to church. I can't remember how often we did because it wasn't every single week. I only know that because when we would go, I wouldn't like know all the songs and hand motions all the kids did to that degree. But I know we went enough that I remember being there and heard stuff about Jesus and all of that. When I was about 13, 14, my sister had started to go to the like youth church thing already. And I decided I was going to go to a summer retreat. I was just trying to like socialize and talk to girls. And that's what I did in the whole retreat to the point where the youth pastor like gave me some book about relationships after it was like, hey, maybe you need to chill.
You were shooting your shot.
I had assumed I was a Christian already. I had prayed a prayer after children's pass when I was a little kid. I don't think I was a Christian. Didn't understand the gospel. Loved my sin. Did not love Jesus. When I start going to the youth group, I think some of that stuff starts to click. My youth pastor, who I still have a good relationship with right now, was fun, was hilarious, also opened the Bible and preached the gospel. He was preaching expository sermons to youth group kids, not in a way we couldn't understand, but the first preaching I'm ever exposed to is biblical. It is expositional preaching. I would ask him all kind of questions. And as soon as I started reading the Bible, my life changed.
Okay.
But this is one of the things about preaching the gospel is, Like, you don't know where people are at. You don't know where the Lord has their heart. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't get to control all of that stuff.
Right.
We don't get to save any souls. We don't get to have someone's heart in the right place. Right. We get to proclaim. We get to love as much as we can tell, try to give people what they need. But the Lord knows, and He knew. Mm-hmm. And my youth pastor, being faithful, was preaching the gospel. And I think the closest thing to me to a moment is we had gone to this event, and there was like an altar call. They were saying something about surrender, and I was like, I'm not sure I've done that, and I'm not sure I'm a great Lord of my life. I'm not sure I'm doing a great job here. That, for me, was one of the clearest moments of a very intentional in my heart. You know what? I think I'm going to, like, let go of trying to be Lord of my own life and the stuff that I don't think the Lord likes. And I think I'm going to, like, try to give that to Him and, like, actively try to go in the other direction.
Wow, and that was at 14.
Yeah. This was around the same time I was starting to not do very good at school because I could not connect it with anything I cared about or that I valued. But at the same time, my curiosity about who God is like, going in full bloom. And I'm starting to, like, read the Bible every day. And then I'm like, ask my youth pastor, like, what's a good book I can read? Like, it wasn't until I started reading Christian books that I started to read books. You know, there's a lot about who I am that seems very obviously just who I am. I'm just like a learner. You know, I'm super curious about everything. I want to understand things deeply, and then I can't understand things without being like, hey, look at this. That's just kind of how I'm built. But that, you know, hadn't bloomed in me yet until then.
So how does this period connect with this whole aspect that's happening in Denton and Lecrae and all these folks?
So I begin to grow, and then I continue to be like one of the youth leaders, but I'm actually like leading. Still at ways in my life is a mess, but I'm growing a lot, understand scripture a lot, passionate. And I'm rapping in my church some. Yeah, I was like on the praise team, but I can't sing, so I was just like lip syncing, and then it'd be like a breakdown, and I would rap, and it was bad. But they were giving me opportunities; I was having a good time.
Yeah, and I mean, just to pause for a second, that's a pretty significant thing to be happening late '90s, early 2000s, like the sense of like a church saying, "Hey, you want to rap?" That's not a lot of people's testimony.
That's right.
So that says that folks were really into investing in the youth.
And my youth pastor was very intentional about trying to at least understand the worlds we were living in and try to allow us to not have to enter an entirely different world when we were together at church.
Now, how did your dad feel about this whole spiritual awakening? And then on top of that, now it's bringing you very back to the thing that he was trying to have you avoid.
So he's not as worried about it as he was about me just liking gangster stuff. But so now he's more like practical, you know, like, I'm trying to think practically how to help my son be a success in the world.
Right.
And giving all of his time to writing raps in his room is probably not that. And I can't imagine responding differently. You know what I'm saying? It's like, what if you're just a writer? What if you're a great writer? What if you just give time to writing? What about music business? He's trying to think about, how can I help my son put himself in a position to provide for himself, provide for his family. Mm-hmm. So there was still some pushback, but it was different.
But then you would do your rap part. And so how does that turn into something more?
So I like made this whole mixtape. My room, I had this computer, and like my mom bought me this little mic. And I was like making some beats. I had a friend who made beats. I was very driven. I was like, I'm gonna figure out how to do this.
Right.
What if we do this? I'm gonna figure out this software. What if I tried this? There was very much of a, I have no idea how, but I'm about to figure this out, because it means a lot to me.
And people don't realize at that time period how isolated you felt if you were trying to combine faith in Christ with music. At that time, who did you know were peers and contemporaries that you were even inspired by to lean on, or was there any?
So my youth pastor talking about Cross Movement.
Okay.
And so at that time, I really liked Cross Movement. Ambassador was my favorite rapper.
Yep.
He's a good friend. And so a lot of that changed my life, and him especially. And he knows, he just turned 50, and I told him, you know, like, I cannot overstate the impact you had on my life. So he was at Dallas Theological Seminary at the time. So he would come do stuff sometimes at, you know, events or something that I was seeing. I remember being at some event outside, he's on stage, with an Iverson jersey on and like some long shorts and some Timbs. His hair was long at the time. His braids was out, so he was like huge fro. Also, not only does he know the Bible, but he's very cool. And everything he says sounds even better because he's saying it. And so I'm like, wow. You know, like I can still be who I want to be and love Jesus. Okay. And so it's not only like we love Jesus. It's also like here's a lot of truth we're putting in these bars. And it has such an impact on me the way my mind is working. I'm like, I want to do that for other people too.
When we come back, Trip Lee will share how getting married and becoming a father had unexpected hardship due to being exhausted from more than just daily life. That's coming up next on Where You're From.
If you're enjoying Where You're From, would you take a moment to write a quick review and give us some stars? Podcast platforms like iTunes and Google promote highly rated shows. So a one-sentence review of what this episode or show means to you and a quick five-star rating will help these important stories reach more people. Thank you for your help and keep listening for more of Where You're From.
God is a genius storyteller. And the evidence of this is threaded throughout Scripture. In Christianity Today's new show, Holy Curiosity, with me, Kat Armstrong, we explore storied connections threaded throughout Scripture from the Old Testament to the New. Our first miniseries, Connecting Dinah and the Woman at the Well, welcomes experts like Drs. Tim Mackey and Diane Landberg to give us insight and context into the physical location and meaning of these two stories. These stories will spark holy curiosity in your own faith, because once you see these connections, you can't unsee them. God wastes no person, place, or thing. Listen and subscribe to Holy Curiosity with Kat Armstrong on your favorite podcast platform.
Hey there. My name is Jade Gustafson, and I'm one of the producers for Where You From. Before we jump back into our conversation with Trip Lee, I wanted to share a quick teaser from our next episode with well-known singer Molly Music. This is Where You From.
I'm taking off through the bushes, and I'm hearing the highway. So I cross over the banister, and now I'm walking on the highway against traffic. And I'm just like fumbling. I'm hoping someone just field goals me. And a car drives by. Courtney Palm? It's one of the football moms that recognizes me, takes me in. My parents hear that I'm there, and they retrieve me. And my dad treated me different every day since. He said, anything my son will fight me for, I support.
Welcome back to Where You're From. I'm Rasul Berry. And in just a moment, we'll get back into our conversation with Trip Lee. But before we do, just a quick reminder that the show notes are available in the podcast description. They not only contain the talking points for today's show, but some links to learn more about Trip Lee and his label, Reach Records. Also, don't forget to check out our other conversations with artists from Reach Records on Where You're From. You can find these links in the show notes or by visiting whereyourfrom.org. That's where, Y-A, from.org. Now let's get back into our conversation with Trip Lee on Where You're From.
So you decide to put on this project.
Yeah.
On your own.
Yeah, it's called The Messiah's Mixtape, right? I get a kid in my school named Aaron who could draw. He drew some little album cover for me. I, like, burnt all the CDs in my house. You know, he put the stickers on them. You know, I was just like, I'm gonna do this.
Uh-huh.
When I first got to go to a real studio the first time, it was like, I'm a whole rapper now. Around that time, I had went to a Cross Moon concert.
Yep.
My best friend growing up is Kirk Franklin's son. Kirk Franklin takes us to this concert because he's like, I want y'all to know about this stuff, right? We go backstage, Lecrae, Tadashi, and Shobaraka, they're opening. And I'm like, oh, all the stuff I like is like East Coast. So I didn't even know there was Southern dudes rapping about Jesus. And that was like, oh, shoot. Right. So I get the album. No one knows who they are. This is 04. Real talk. Lecrae's first album has just come out. This is, no one's a big deal. I took it home, listened to it. I knew somebody who knew him, right? It was like, hey, can you give me LaCarge's number? I was like, sure. I called him. I was like, hey, I'm doing this mixtape release party in my church. Can you and Tadashi come? He was like, sure. And him and Tadashi came and like opened for me my mixtape release party.
So, you know, going back to this album release concert, yeah. right? Like, I'm curious about how you had the boldness to ask Lecrae and Tadashi to be there on two fronts. One, just on the artist tip, like, you don't want to get outshined on your own thing. And, you know, you got these dudes and these some heavy hitters. Yeah. But then two, like, man, they got a whole album out. And there's this thing that you're doing that's not on that same kind of platform yet. So what gave you that, that courage?
Honestly, you know, I think it was a single-mindedness that just didn't occur to me. I was like, I love God and I'm rapping about Jesus. Mm-hmm. They love God and they're rapping about Jesus and they're really good. I would love it if they were there. They seemed obviously better than me to me, but I was just like, I don't know. It would be amazing if they, I would only make it better if they were also there. So it wouldn't even, I think of it in my mind either to be like, oh, but they're so much further than me. It's like, no, we're doing the same thing. We love God. We're rapping about him. And that's exactly how they were thinking too. I mean, who does that? Like, sure, teenager, I'll come right. You know, it's just that, this, like, status, that just wasn't what was going through our minds. Sometimes even to the point of, like, you should at least be aware other people think about it like that. But for the whole beginning, that's just not, was not in our minds whatsoever. And I think it shaped how we moved. And they came, did it, and we built a relationship from there. He was like, hey, is anybody discipling you? I said, what's that? And then we started building a relationship from there.
And at this point, you're by far the youngest person in the group.
Yeah, that's right. I'm in high school, everybody's in college. So I'm about 10 years behind.
Okay. And what was that like?
It didn't bother me. I think, though I didn't realize at the time, I think I just got kind of old soul. You know, like I was like thinking more deeply about particular things. So it was some stuff that I don't even, it's not even to like make myself sound cool. It just, I don't know, I would rather be doing this than that. Like, I would rather go spend time with these people who are like influencing my soul than go to their party. It's just, it seemed more exciting to me at the time. It just felt like where my heart was pulling me. So I spent a lot of time with them. They were pouring into me, helped me understand how to read the Bible. You know, it was, again, another really foundational season for me, which whenever I tell stories about my journey, there are very common themes about seasons when the Lord sent people into my life who poured into me, and it is why I grew a lot in those seasons that I'm really grateful for.
And this is where my introduction to you comes in. With the words, Lord, it's obvious they don't know you, but they need to know you. And I pray that they would meet you through us. Yeah. That's why we out here in these streets.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, this is the first thing, you know, 116 compilation, right?
Yeah.
Who is this person and where did this voice come from?
Yeah, which was everybody's response.
So let's just at least open that up because, first of all, like, did you know that your voice was very distinct?
No, I didn't. But once we did that and more people was hearing what I was doing than just, you know, my friends and you know, my mom's friends who bought my mixtape. Yeah, people started saying, hey, like, you got a really distinct voice, just the way it sounds. That sounds dope. I was like, oh, thanks. And that was a big moment for me to get to be on that song with Tadashi and to get to be on the compilation. I was 17 years old.
Yeah.
It felt very much like I got added to a thing that was already amazing. Over the years, I've learned from people how impactful that was for them. Like, bro, you was my age, you was a little older than me, and, you know, it made me feel like, oh, I can chase after Jesus because it's a dude, it's a teenager on here who's, you know.
When do you realize that it's not just like a feature on a song on this particular group, but that this is, like you said, a season of your life?
Yeah. To their credit, the dudes at Reach were more interested in my development as a follower of Jesus than me being a rapper on the label. So, you know, they were even telling us, like, hey, I'm working on this. Can you hop on this? And Craig's like, you know what? Let's just, I'd rather us just, like, link and talk, you know. And for me, that I was like, oh, cool, you know, because I was also more interested in my development as a believer. But as time went on, I remember it was when I was 17 and Ben Washer said, hey, you know, what would you think about doing an album? And I was thinking, I would love that. You know, if it was like dream come true to me, if it was like I made it, I'm in high school. Like, I was in chemistry class today before you called me to say that. You know what I'm saying? And so I start that first album while I'm a senior in high school, started when I'm 17. I waited to sign the contract till after my birthday, which was in December, so I, you know, could be 18 signing the contract. Mm-hmm. And, you know, finished the album. My senior high school came out like a couple weeks after I graduated. And that felt like a huge thing. I was incredibly excited. Didn't understand what it was going to turn into at all. But, yeah, it was a really exciting season.
And the album was?
If They Only Knew.
If They Only Knew.
Yeah.
Came out the gate strong. Were you surprised with the reaction and the response that the album had?
Yeah. Sometimes it's hard for me to remember what we thought was going to happen.
Right.
It's not this. This is not what I thought. Yeah. I think I was very much not a practical person at the time either. Mm-hmm. So I'm not even sure what I thought it was going to turn into. Right. I don't think I thought this was going to be my job and I was going to travel the world and say I'm going to provide for my wife and three kids. That didn't enter my mind at all.
Right.
I was just like, I love Jesus.
Right.
I love hip hop. I get to do both of those. Right. Let's go. That was kind of it.
So, you know, especially with the 116 documentary coming out,
yeah,
we've been kind of in this reflective mode. So, you know, I talked to Lecrae earlier and kind of was like, okay, so this is kind of an origin story of the group. And every person is almost like a character. So Sho, he said, was the contrarian. Lecrae's, you know, kind of jump into it very like, let's do it. Let's just action.
Yeah.
Tadashi, you know, was always questioning things, but called you the sponge. You were always just soaking up information. You know, Cray told me this story of how he was telling you about systematic theology.
Yeah.
And gave you a book. And then a few days later, you came back and was like, you got something else. Do you remember that?
So I think he put me on A Knowing God by J.I. Packer. That was one. And I read it. And I was like, man, I didn't know God was this big. Like, oh, like God is like really big. Hmm. You know, it's like, oh, wait, Jesus is God. But like, he's God. And every time I was just like, man, God is so much more amazing than I even understood. And I'm like, I want to keep understanding more. And I don't think it was just a stack of knowledge thing. That was not cool to my friends to read J.I. Packer. That's not a cool thing. I was blown away by God. I was like, I want to know more. Help me to understand more and what this has to do with stuff, you know?
Yeah, and that's something that definitely stuck out to your peers. So that curiosity, you mentioned it earlier. What other areas of your life that you saw that curiosity?
So that's when it really bloomed, was when I put my faith in Jesus. But it was the same thing with music. Like me and all my friends, we used to rap together in middle school, but there started to like be a shift. I clearly just took to it in a different way. So like we all love Jay-Z. I'm also sitting with the album booklet, studying the bars and trying to understand these double entendres and like, oh, shoot, this is why this happens and this is, you know, I'm printing out lyrics off the internet for other stuff I like, and I'm trying to understand how I can also do that, and I'm writing rhymes every single day. It's just kind of how I approached things that meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And so it was like a season of my life where the only things that mattered to me, for good or bad, was hip-hop and Jesus. That was it. And so I'm like, I'm going full speed into those things. As I got older, even the things that Jesus cares about expanded for me. So the way I couldn't figure out why I should care about history class, I was like, I just care about Jesus, is because I'm not understanding yet what the sovereignty of Jesus over all things even means, or what we learn from things that humans have done, and how I look through that through the lens of what Jesus has given me. You know, I didn't understand any of that yet. By the time I graduated high school, it was starting to click, like Jesus wants me to care about what I'm doing in school. Like I have to do my work well. I mean, my love for reading, I don't think would have happened if I didn't put my trust in Jesus, because it gave me a reason to care. And now it sounds weird to talk about that blooming, because it just seems like, if I'm anything, it's curious and I want to learn stuff. And I feel most at home and comfortable when I am learning and growing and seeing more of what's there in the area. If this is part of how God has made me, what ways does that allow me to be faithful in the spaces that God has put me into? And what ways am I going to have the capacity to dive deeper than other people? And how can I use that for God's glory?
Yeah. So that why question, it looms big. In your book, Rise, you have a chapter, Age is More Than a Number.
Yeah.
And in that, you talk about the surprise that people have when they find out about how young you got married. So I'm sure that's part of the expansion. So tell us about how that happened and what that has done in terms of your expansion.
So I went to Bible college in Philly. I went there because I found out there was such thing as Bible college. And I was like, oh, that's why I'm going to college. I'm going to Bible college. Because Ambassador had gone there, Truth had gone there. My wife, Jessica, she was there a year before me. We met through mutual friends. She ended up going to the same church I was at. And so for me at that time, though, I was like, I'm not trying to get into no relationships because I ain't trying to get married. And I ain't trying to just do no relationships for no reason. So I'm chilling. I had, you know, some relationships in high school that was like, I ain't doing that again. But we were drawn to each other. Long story short, I ended up just like talking to my pastors, like, hey, you know, I think I may like her. I think maybe I could see her as like someone being my wife, which again is, you know, I'm very young. And so I'm like, but I'm probably tripping. So help me out. And long story short, pastor's like, yeah, I mean, just take it slow. But like, we also know her well. She's been around too. That was one of the dope things is we're at the same church plant. You know, I get to see her growing. That was one of the things that even when dudes ask me about finding a wife, I'm like, look for the kind of humble heart that grows. And I watched her sit under women who were pouring into her, and I watched her grow, and I watched her love for people, her compassion. And they had also seen, I was like, yeah, I think maybe just take it slow, but I think you are mature enough to begin to move in that direction. So we dated for about a year and a half. Then I proposed to her in November of 2008, and my dad was getting sick. So we had planned to get married in the fall of 09. We moved it up to May of 09. My dad ended up dying a couple days before we got married. But we still just went ahead and had our wedding then. And yes, she had graduated the week before. I was still in college. Yeah, she had just turned 22. I was 21. There were other things that made that a kind of tumultuous season, but the Lord was really, really good. You know, it was like the thing that was sweet in a season where there were other hard things going on, like my dad dying and all kind of stuff. So,
yeah, man, that seems incredibly intense to have those two things happen.
Yeah, just a couple of days apart.
And was your dad's decline pretty fast?
It was. We knew that he was sick, but the decline started to seem a lot quicker than we thought. And so that's when we moved our wedding up.
Right.
And kind of like replanned a whole another wedding just so he could be there. And, you know, God knows. Wow. But there are ways that the Lord used that to like bring us together really fast. And even like her with my family. Like, I think my family likes her more than me. yeah, obviously that's a way to get really close to somebody's family really quick is to be there in a really tough time in those last moments. Mm. She didn't get a lot of time with my dad beforehand. She had come on to visit several times and, you know, he liked her and she was like, it's kind of intimidating. And I was like, yep. But, you know, enough to be able to have some sweet moments. And
so I think at this point, could you see how maybe his trust in you was expanding as he was seeing the trajectory of your life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even in some of his final months, there were things about conversations we had where it's like, oh, you know what? I think there are even times when we had conversations, we were butting heads, that I may have even misread how much he listened to, even respected my voice as his son, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That in those like final months and levels of vulnerability and conversations, it's like, okay, we're more on the same page on some things than I had understood. And there are more things that I thought he didn't understand that I think he did understand better than I thought.
Have you ever thought that even though he didn't get to see the full expression, he could see it coming?
Yeah.
Because he could trust you with what was happening.
Absolutely. Where even as there was a like, are you sure you want to be a rapper? Are you sure you want to give? There was also a like, look at what my son has been able to do, though. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a weird. Who's rapping about Jesus and like traveling around the country as a teenager doing it? It's like, what is that? Mm-hmm. You know, so there was a acknowledgement about, oh, OK, and my son is doing something special and a respect for that and seeing that even when we butted heads, there was a way that I went about things where there was a mutual respect for.
And so there's this incredible talk about season change, you know, of your dad's passing and then you entering into this new phase of being a head of household yourself.
Yeah.
Talk to me about how that aspect of that season has formed who Tripp Lee is.
Yeah. Well, it was the beginning of me and my wife's marriage. I was diagnosed with an illness in 2007, chronic fatigue syndrome. So my body would just quit on me every semester. And I would keep being like, no, you know what? I'm going to just take on more credits. And no, I'm good. And just finally was like, I at least need to like step back because this is not great use of my time, and it doesn't seem like this is going to be the way I'm going to be trained for pastoral ministry.
And just from a standpoint, how long have you been married before the symptoms first start to
emerge? No, they started before I got married. So 2007, it was my second year of college.
Wow.
And we got married in 09.
Okay.
And I understand it a lot less at that time, and I'm still like trying to be normal, even though I'm obviously not, but doctors don't even understand it that well.
So what did you first notice when you're like, something's wrong?
It was actually summer after the first tour I ever did. I was on tour with Cross Movement.
You're on tour with the people that you were looking up to and being inspired by. It's like, does life get better?
That's right.
Right.
And then I get back to school for my sophomore year, and then I just feel terrible. I'm like sleeping 18 hours a day, and I'm still exhausted the other hours I'm awake. So something's obviously very wrong. And, you know, go to a doctor, they're like, oh, you got Epstein-Barr, you know, take this, you'll be cool. And, you know, long story short, I'm not. And I go to another doctor, they're like, we'll test you for everything else. Think it's chronic fatigue syndrome. It's not really anything you can do. Eat good, do your best. And so that's also hard as I'm trying to understand it, feeling guilty about not doing well in school. There's teachers who aren't super gracious, you know, they don't understand them, but like, we all get tired sometimes.
Would you say that this was, at the time, kind of the apex of your career, musically?
It was at the season when stuff was really starting to ramp, yeah.
Was that difficult to have to forego opportunities and things in order to just to try to focus on your health?
Yeah. It was hard to process it all because I didn't understand what was happening.
Right.
And doctors didn't give much understanding what was happening.
Okay.
And I'm just kind of out here. I'm like, am I just lazy? Is it, you know, everything about it was strange, you know. And sometimes I look back and I think it is miraculous that albums were made. I'm not really sure how it happened, honestly. I wish I could go back and process it with my 30-year-old brain.
Yeah. How did your wife, Jessica, and that season of marriage help you navigate through that?
Well, my wife will devote herself to whatever's in front of her as if it is the greatest thing. That's, I mean, she's the most disciplined, diligent person I've ever met. Mm-hmm. I like to give myself credit for choosing a good wife, but I couldn't have known how great of a wife she would be and how necessary having her as a wife would be to me being able to navigate things at all. So that even when it's seasons when it's like, oh, it feels like everything's burning down around me, it's like the Lord has very graciously allowed our home to be not only a safe haven, but a happy place where we have kind of linked arms and wrestled through things together. You know, my health is the hardest thing about every area of my life, including my marriage. And the Lord, even within my marriage, you know, there are things that we, you know, had to figure out about how to navigate harder seasons with that together. And God has just been so, so gracious. So that, you know, it's an illness that a lot of people don't understand. But my wife, even when it negatively affects her, there's a level of understanding and grace. I don't have the insecurity of, is this going to be the time when they're like, I can't mess with you no more. It's too much, that I do not have with her.
Because it is something that a lot of people don't understand. Paint a picture of how chronic fatigue syndrome in your own life is made for very difficult days.
Yeah, it is different depending on, you know, different people. It affects them in different ways. There's some people who life can look pretty normal, other people who are much worse than me and just completely bedridden all the time. For me, you know, it can vary depending on the season, but I do not remember the last time I felt rested. I don't feel rested. My body doesn't recharge like most people's do. I don't know how many good hours I'm going to have in any given day. Mm. You know, average day, you know, maybe I have a couple good hours. It's also unpredictable. So it can make it very hard to say, oh, I'm going to do ABC tomorrow at 3. I got you. And to be able to do that all the time, right? And that can make it hard not only with tasks, but also relationally, you know what I'm saying? Especially when it's hard to understand. Even to like, you know, hey, Dad, can we play basketball before dinner? Like, I would really love to. I just, if we do, I'm going to just be out. I'm going to be down for count. I don't think we can do it right now. So there's that, an inability to do stuff. And also, hey, I know I said I was going to, but I can't, or I wasn't able to follow through. That, yeah, just can make stuff difficult. Then in different seasons, I've had to try to navigate it in different ways.
You know, what's fascinating about that is it kind of comes full circle with the thing, you know, that people have always almost criticized you about, which is like, You doing too much. Why are you going so fast? You young. And this aspect of time, how has this challenge impacted your perspective on time?
It certainly reshaped even how my ambitiousness expresses itself. And there's some ways that, you know, I've had to a few times be like, I don't know how to be me with these limitations because I'm like such a big dreamer and I'm ambitious. I cannot count on having whatever energy I have for that amount of time. And I feel like right now the Lord is teaching me to be more and more content with what I can do in this moment.
Wow.
And then seeing what's next and being okay with that.
There's a track you do called Still Unashamed.
Yeah.
Which I think is especially appropriate in light of this kind of documentary coming out.
Yeah.
What did that mean for you? And why was that an important song to do?
Yeah.
Kind of at this point, maybe 10 plus 15 years from the beginning of this whole journey.
Yeah.
And especially in terms of what the conversation was about you and your peers at that point. So just tell us about that song.
Yeah. So a couple of things. I want people to know that what I was about in 2006, when I put out If They Only Knew, that's what I'm about right now. The gospel is still the power of God for salvation. Jesus is still king, and that is what my life is about. We don't always deal with any change well. So aside from change that's negative, anything that's a little different feels like, oh, wait, what is this? That's not what you were doing. You know, so it can feel, you know, not feel right to people. So I want to make sure people know. And then on the other side, there are people who do very strongly feel like y'all don't care about this stuff no more. And some of y'all are moving a little different. There are times when, like, me and Deuce, who I love, who've been doing stuff, we might disagree on something. And that's cool. If you don't disagree with people that you love, then I don't think you know them. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and so just wanting to make that declaration so that people know I'm still about that. And to just say, just because stuff looks a little different to people sometimes doesn't mean what's core isn't there anymore.
And so I know you're a theological dude. So, like, how do you understand missiologically the value and the importance of being still unashamed, but in a way that's different than 2006?
Yeah. God did not have to use us at all to bring anybody to himself, to show anybody what he's like. You know, like when my kids ask my wife to help with dinner, and it's like she holds their hand as they, like, she does not need them, but she lovingly includes them because she loves them. You can help me do what I can do in my own strength. That's what God has done with us. But because we are human beings amongst other human beings who see what's going on, we want to be able to deliver the good news. We want to be able to show people what God is like in ways that connect with them where they are. It's like when we have a conversation with somebody, we listen to them and then we respond based on what we just heard. And if I'm living in the world and I see where people are at and I see what people need and I see where culture's going, I see where culture's shifting, I want to think, how can I be as faithful to Jesus as ever while also responding to what I see going on around us? I do not want people to feel like when we begin to have conversations about Jesus, we enter into such a different universe that doesn't address any of my issues, any of my concerns. I don't know what you're talking about. That has nothing to do with these issues I had last week. That's nothing to do with the argument I'm having with my wife. That don't have nothing to do with my kids. That what you're saying has nothing to do with that. I want to say, no, we live in the real world and Jesus has something to say to the real world. You don't go over to some abstract thing when you begin to talk about God. Jesus put on actual human flesh and walked around. And then after he resurrected, he showed up to 500 people who saw him in the actual world and he walked around. I want you to know that that Jesus is still speaking. He's using flawed people to do it. But we got to talk about him in the actual lives that we live. And if we're not paying attention, if we're never adjusting based on what we see in front of us, it's just people are not going to get the realness.
That's so good. So it's like if we're going to be real about being the body of Christ in the same way that he indwelled among us and touched people, that we have to then be his hands and feet. And that means engage and touch the issues that they are dealing with, which will change over time. They're not the same things from 10 years ago. But one of the things that is the same and is the fact that I think maybe this was what part of what touched me to see you and Tadashi on the track.
Because
it took me all the way back 10 years before.
Yeah, man.
116 compilation.
Yeah.
Was there an intentional symmetry between that moment and kind of like we're the same people that we were from the very, very first time you put on the track?
Absolutely. That was absolutely the intention. Originally, it was going to be me, Lecrae, Show, and Tedashi on it. It just didn't all come together. And it was the last song that I did for the record. Wow. But yeah, that was absolutely very intentional. I want people to see that.
And what has that meant for you on a relational side? Because when we started it, it was before the music, like you said, it was them pouring into you.
Yeah.
What has that meant now, 15 years later, on a personal level? What has being part of this group and this community meant for you today?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's helpful to roll with a squad of people who are about that same thing. And I think that's part of the power of what we've done. It's not like, oh, look at that one guy who loves God. It's like, look at this group of people who love Jesus. And this is part of what I love about more people coming along. I think it's important for people to see, not only is there just one person who's like me, but there are a bunch of people who love God, standing firm on who he is, because that can just give us the kind of confidence. I've seen God do it before, so I know he can do it. I've seen him do it, and not just, it wasn't like one time he did it. He's done this several times, you know? If that was like the thing that my career meant, the Lord used my career to show people that God can work in someone's life, no matter, you know, where they come from, what age they are, he can use them. If that was impressed on people because of what God has done through me, and that was it, I'm good.
It is so encouraging to hear Tripp Lee be honest about his own journey and how, in spite of his struggles with chronic fatigue, he continues to do the work God has called him to do. When we trust in the strength and rest of the Lord, he can empower us to get through whatever this day may bring. This is Where You're From. I'm Rasul Berry. And remember, it's not just about where you're at. It's also about where you're from. This show was produced by Daniel Ryan Day, Ryan Clevenger, and Jade Gustafson, and was engineered by Gabrielle Boward and Kevin Burgess. Also want to thank Barry and Brian for their help in supporting and promoting Where You're From. Thanks, y'all. Where You're From is part of the Voices Collection from Our Daily Bread Ministries.